everyone, and welcome to the Writer's Divine Den Show. This is your host, Jackie Van Kempen, bringing you inspiration and information for your writing journey. And I am so happy to have today my wonderful guest, Kathy Sparrow. And Kathy is an award-winning author, speaker, and creativity leadership coach. Her work has appeared in national and regional magazines, and she is the author of numerous books, including her memoir On the Mother Lagoon, Fly Fishing and the Spiritual Journey, and her novel soon to be released, The Whisper Teachings of Grandmother Trout. A master RIM facilitator, she has trained with Jack Canfield, one of the top human potential leaders in the world, and is a member of his assisting team. A former university professor of writing, she now dedicates much of her time to helping others develop their messages and share their stories with the world. And I'm so excited because Kathy actually was an editor on my very first book, Letters to My Daughter, Mother's Journey of Healing and Transformation. And then a couple years later, by chance, we meet again, and I'm just so happy to have her on my show as my guest. So, Kathy, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I love the divine choreography of how everything kind of comes together and whatnot.
So true. So I want to, you know, talk a little bit about how you got to, you know, how did you start writing?
Well, I started writing because it was a passion of mine. I remember as a young girl, you know, I saved up my allowance every week to buy books when the Weekly Reader came out, you know, and that was like a little the way the schools got kids to read back then. So, I mean, that was the highlight of my week, putting my Weekly Reader order in and then getting my books. And then in the summer, I would remember spending a lot of time reading, like, the Chincoteague Pony series by Margaret Henry and whatnot. And I always thought, I want to be a writer. Mm. I want to be a writer. Now, I didn't, you know, when 8, 10 years old, I had that thought. And when I got to plan out my high school curriculum, I met with the guidance counselor. And at that time, my mother sat in the room with me. And I told the guidance counselor, I want to be a writer, and I'm interested in the theater. And he literally took his glasses off, put the folder down and said, you'll never be a writer. And he didn't even talk about the theater.
Mm.
So, and then I got kind of trudged into a business track. Excuse me. But that passion never stopped. And when I finally, you know, graduated, and I grew up in a time where really I wasn't encouraged to, a time and a place, I should say, because I'm not that old. Like, wait a minute here, I'm not that old. And then, you know, I grew up in a very rural area where really the best you could hope for was to get a job as a teacher or a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, as a woman, be, and this is scary because it's not that long ago, but that kind of, you know, limited thinking was still, it was and still is, you know, very active in very rural, isolated areas. So I, you know, get a little college degree, you know, work a little bit, have a little pin money, and get married and have kids. And that's what I did. At 18, I got married. I had 2 kids by the time I was 23. Loved
wow.
them dearly. The best thing I ever did. And the one thing I did do, too, is that I got my accounting degree, an associate's. But then I said, this isn't me. And I started, started following that passion and not buying into somebody else's story about me.
Mm.
And I started a liberal arts track, distance learning, because I was working, raising 2 kids, and, you know, in a marriage that wasn't really the best either. So I remember one of my professors said to me, you need to write. You really, really are good at this. And I heard that repeatedly. And so finally, in my mid-20s, I wrote this article wrote an essay about climbing Monument Mountain, and this is back east in the Berkshires. I live in upstate New York, so this is just across the border in Massachusetts, and how I was afraid of heights. And that particular day, I had my 2 kids, and we met their uncle and ants, and they were like climbing all over the rocks, and I'm like, oh my God, this is high up. You know, I was higher than the hawk circling below. And then something happened, and I settled into it, and I started to enjoy it. So I wrote that, sent it off to this local cultural paper that, you know, talked about dancers and writers and artists. Well, clearly it was the wrong audience for this particular essay, but the editor liked the piece so well that she called me and she says, I can't use this piece, but would you like to write for me?
Wow.
And so, yeah, it was awesome. And that began a 6-year monthly gig that only ended because I moved out of the area. So every month I got to interview writers, dancers, artists. And I got to I interviewed Kermit Love, who is the creator of Snuffleupagus and Oscar the Grouch. Anita Roddick, who founded The Body Shop. And just a myriad of other people who were just really interesting people. I love people's story. And so that gave me that opportunity to write about people's story and learn more.
That's fascinating. And one thing that I really appreciate about what you shared is that we live in California, and it's such a big cultural state, and, you know, we have so much access here, at least in Southern California. And just to think, you know, that there are parts in the U.S. that are still very conservative in the sense of, you know, this is how things are, and you're not really encouraged to go try something bigger. And then for you to even be in that midst, but to have that awareness of like, you know what, this is not for me. And then to move yourself out of that place and into really listening to that wisdom of your heart and following that passion. I think that's so amazing and so beautiful and so important, you know, for women, especially because I think women are more conditioned to live life that way.
Right.
So it's very inspiring.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I wanted to ask you, like, you know, besides going through all of that, you know, what obstacles have you had to overcome?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think like any writer, we have that little voice inside of us that says, who are you to be doing this? You know, what makes you so smart to do this? You know, and I think really it kind of stems back to that narrative that I bought into where my guidance comes and said, you'll never be a writer. And so that he was like a monkey on my shoulder for a good part of my life. And I mean, even after I'd had, you know, volumes of portfolio built, you know, like 5 big binders full of articles that I'd written. And I mean, I moved from upstate New York to Connecticut to Indianapolis. And in Indianapolis, I was on an advisory board for a women's magazine. That's where I started editing books and working for the Four Dummies publishers, and then ghostwriting with a man who at the time was John Mellencamp's personal trainer.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, so I had all of this accumulated, and then I never finished my degree, excuse me, you know, in my earlier years. So when I partly because raising 2 kids and working part time and dealing with marriage, excuse me, there was not enough, as a friend of mine called it, bandwidth to take care of all that.
Oh, so, I hear you.
Yeah. So I waited, and when my daughter graduated from college from Indiana University, it was like I was so happy for her, and yet it felt like somebody stuck a knife in my gut. And so I went back to school, finished my degree, and by this time I was in Texas, and I didn't have Texas history, right, or Texas government. So I'm sitting in classrooms with 18-year-old Hispanic kids, and here I am, a middle-aged white chick, right? And I'm going, oh, my God, I want this really badly, don't I? But it really gave me, that's another story, but it kind of gave me a perspective of what it's like to be in the minority, which is really cool. And that's a whole nother story, and that actually leads to some more of my academic study. But so I finished my bachelor's, turned right around, and started my master's degree. And I, the obstacle that that doubt was still there, you know, even though I was like acing my courses and whatnot. And I remember the night before I was to defend my thesis, I was like in a heap. Like, oh my God, I can't, this is horrible, this stinks, like, what am I doing? You know, and that, that guidance counselor was still like, you'll never be a writer. And here I was about to defend a master's thesis about the power of story, which is basically where I, you know, talked about how his story, his master narrative, had been the thing that I had to overcome to write my own counter narrative, which is basically the thesis and anything else I've written probably before or since then. And so I think the biggest obstacle any writer has, and I see this in my coaching practice with my writers, is like, oh my God, somebody's going to read this and they're going to judge me about this.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be thinking, who are you? You know, who does she think she is? Or who does he think he is? That kind of thing. And that's, you know, if there's something about putting your name on a book and or an article instead, you know, having, like, you never know who's going to read it, who's going to go up to you in the grocery store and say, hey, I read that, you know. And I've had that happen. You know, people who, when I owned the fly fishing lodge and I wrote On the Mother Lagoon, I wrote it for women, but I had a lot of men come up to me and say, God, I read your book and you just say things the way I think them out there. And I just love it. And I read it twice and I'm going, oh my God, he read everything. He knows more about, you know, so it's kind of exposing too, you know. Especially the way I write, and you know, it's like in the way you write, it's very personal. It's very transformational, right? It's, you're vulnerable enough to share your story so that somebody can learn from it.
Yeah.
And then, pretty much, you know, people know a lot about you without you really knowing a lot about them. So it can be a little off-putting. So, yeah.
I'm just laughing because I've totally had that experience. And when I wrote my book, which, you know, you've worked on it, so you know what my story is about, and I share this story all the time, how I didn't talk to my parents about what I was writing about, and then kind of hoping that they wouldn't really read my book, but then they read my book, and they weren't very happy about what I wrote, and then fast forward, I live in a very conservative community, and, you know, I'm making friends with some of my kids, you know, the moms of some of my kids' friends, and I was just having a conversation with them and sharing, oh, yeah, I'm an author, I have this book, blah, blah, blah. And then one of them asked me, well, you know, what would happen if we read your book? How would you feel? And I'm like, oh, that's totally fine. And then afterwards, I'm like freaking out because I'm thinking, well, it's okay if other people who I don't know read my book, but then these people who are really close to me, they're going to know all these things about me. And I started to, like, freak out about it. And you're right, and putting your story out there and being vulnerable and, you know, people are going to find out about you and what you did. But at the same time, I've had so many people tell me how my story had really empowered them and inspired them. And so it puts everything in perspective. And of course, you still have to deal with the people who are closest to you. And it's sometimes they're part of your story and you're going to have to deal with their point of view about it. But it shouldn't stop you from still expressing your message because it's going to help so many other people.
That's exactly it. And so what I believe about the writing process, especially when we're writing our counter-narrative or, you know, our story, claiming our story, is that while we're healing as we write, and I totally believe in the power of writing to heal, there's a shared benefit when someone, even the circumstances aren't the same, and most people don't have exact circumstances. If it evokes an emotion that is similar to what they've experienced,
mm-hmm.
and they see how you walked your way or, you know, dug your way out of a circumstance and gotten to the other side, that gives them hope that they can do the same thing. And I really believe that, you know, if we feel like there's a book that needs to come out of us, it needs to be written because that's the universe saying, hey, I need you to step up and help some people. You understand this? And so this is your job, this is your mission, and, you know, I can't tell you how many people are going to be helped by it, but even if one person helps, there'll be a ripple effect. So that's kind of that's what I feel when we get that urge to write, that there's something that not only we'll heal from as we're writing it, but there's somebody out there that needs that. We never know. We never know who really is going to pick up our books and perhaps it'll save their life.
So true.
Yeah, they might have the courage to leave an abusive relationship or start a business or, you know, tap into their own passions to do something that's going to make a difference in somebody else's life. We don't know.
Very true. Which actually leads me to my next question, because I think this, you know, when we are thinking about how we're going to share our message and how we're going to, especially in the written form, and I think a lot of aspiring writers sometimes get a little bogged down with how to do it, or are they doing the right thing? Are they sharing the right messages? Is it too much to share? Or so, you know, what tips do you have? Or can you just share some tips for aspiring writers?
Well, my suggestion is to get a coach. I mean, as much as, you know, and I don't do that to kind of sell myself or sell I don't care who they work with, because what I've seen is, like, anybody who's not trained formally in writing will sit down and start writing, right? They'll just sit down and start writing, and what, and I liken kind of the writing process, the building the book process, to like building a house. So when you sit down to start writing, it's like trying to build a house without the blueprint and without gathering all the materials. So I, you know, really, I start my clients with, and I start myself with all the same, you know, who's my reader? Who is that? And I try to get, not like I want to reach thousands, but who is that one person? And I really sit down and I describe that one person who needs to hear my message right now. And that does not mean we're just going to sell one book, but it,
that's good to know.
It gives us somebody to talk to on the other side of our computer screen. As we're writing, we can imagine that particular person sitting across from us, and it makes the words come out easier, and then it gives us a focus. We really know knowing the audience is perfect. It kind of goes back to the example where I wrote that essay and sent it off to the wrong, you know, really clearly the wrong magazine. It was a happy accident. It, you know, landed me the writing gig. But essentially, if you don't know who you're writing for, it's, you know, your boat's going to come dead in the water, kind of. There won't be any wind behind the sails. So knowing your audience is one. And then I mind map everything. Because we may come up with an idea, a concept. So, for instance, I'm now working on women, money, and inner male connection. And I know my audience is the, you know, women who struggle with having a stable financial platform. And so I had to mind map, you know, what am I going to talk about? And, you know, my own story of the, you know, the roller coaster cash flow throughout my entire life. And then my thesis is that those of us who have had a roller coaster relationship with our money usually have not had a strong male role model in their life. And so therefore, our inner male is not strong. And so when we go out to build businesses and support ourselves, or even be in a healthy partnership where we're, you know, we do have an equal partnership, that inner male isn't there to kind of step up to the plate. So we often find ourselves kind of working from our hearts a little bit more. So I mind map all the ideas that I want to put in that book. And then from there, chunk those ideas down even more, thinking about the stories that I would put in each section. This is even before I think of chapters, right? I'm just ideas, random themes that I want to, not random, but themes that I want to investigate. And really, I think of the writing as the discovery process. I don't have to know all the answers up front, because when I'm writing, the answers more and more comes to me.
Yeah.
It's like the universe drops other sources into our lap, or, you know, there's stories that we can then plug in. So after mind mapping, that's when I kind of step back and go, okay, I want this theme here, and then I start kind of doing the chapter layout, and only then do I really start writing. And I don't think about it, and then I think this is more of a mindset rather than a tool, but rather than thinking, oh my God, I'm going to write a book, think about, I'm going to write a chapter on just this idea. Because writing 10 to, you know, or 15 pages, right, 15 to 20 at most,
mm-hmm.
is a lot easier than thinking, oh, my God, I've got to write a 150-page book.
Yep.
You know? So by chunking it down, it becomes a little more manageable. And the other thing is to make writing a practice.
Yes.
There is nothing harder than sitting in front of your computer to write. I would rather go out running in the sweltering heat. I used to be that way, but most people would rather go out running in the sweltering heat than sit down in front of their computer. I love writing. It feeds me.
I'm just laughing because, I've experienced that.
Yeah, and most people do. I have clients who, you know, all fired up in the beginning. I got to run and write this book. And most of my clients are trainers and coaches who need, you know, want to write books for the back of the room. But I really actually, up until this point, that's what it's been. I really decided in the last couple of weeks that my favorite clients are like you, who really write to transform, right? And want to help people, but are willing to sit in that chair in front of their computer and sweat and cry and get angry that they have to sit there and do this, because it's hard work to sit there and then go back and write about things that might not have been very pleasant. But by doing that, we're claiming our story. We're becoming empowered by saying, hey, this is what happened, and this is how I view it. Kind of like when your parents didn't like what you wrote. It's like they have their idea of what happened. You have your story.
Right.
And you have every right to have your story. We all have every right to have our story. So we have to be willing to sit in our chair and make it a practice. Because there's a lot of things that can come up, those obstacles, those doubts, those fears of what are they going to say about this, that are going to get in the way. So the way I think about practice is schedule. This is nothing but, you know, time management too. Look at your schedule and say, okay, and don't think about writing for 3 hours on one day. Nobody does it. Well, I mean, some writers do that, but they're practiced. You know, they've got their old hats at this. But really what to do is, like, if most of us work, you know, have other things. I mean, I coach and I am back teaching, or will be in the fall at the university part-time. So I'm already looking at my schedule. Okay, so where am I going to write? And I put that in. I schedule that time in, just like I schedule my yoga time in and, you know, everything else that goes in there, just, you know, hair appointments. My writing time is right in there with it. And I got to show up at that computer whether I feel like it or not.
Right.
And most of the time, and there are days when I don't feel like it, you know, if I'm tired or I just, you know, whatever. Or sometimes it's like, oh, I don't want to write about this, but I know I'm going to have to. I tell all my clients, just show up. I don't care if you look at that screen for 15 minutes and nothing comes out. You're saying to the universe, you're saying to your subconscious, this is my writing time. You don't do emails. You don't do Facebook. You open your files for your book. And you set the intention that something's going to come out. So you either plan on doing time, you know, a certain period of time, or you're going to write it. Actually, just before this call, I just got a client texted me and said, I'm doing this a paragraph a day. A paragraph a day. It's getting done, though, right?
Hey,
Most of the time, if we say we're going to write a paragraph a day, there's more that comes out. If I say I'm going to write, you know, 30 minutes in the morning, most of the time I write for an hour, and then later in the day I'll go back and look at what I've written. So as long as we show up consistently, it's like practicing for a marathon or lifting weights. You know, we have to show up and we have to put in the time, and then over time it gets easier. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. And I it's so funny because I'm listening, I'm hearing you say all these things, and I'm thinking, oh, yeah, that's about me. Yep, I do that every day. Yep, yeah. And even, you know, like, I love to write. I absolutely love to write, and it comes to me usually easily, unless
mm-hmm.
I am trying to write a book, because all of a sudden I have to sit there and I have to think of these stories, and I seriously, just this summer alone, I started a Chronicles of the Misfit Mom, which I wrote one story and never went back to finish. I started a novel, which I wrote 10 pages and never went back to finish. And it is, I mean, like, it's that you sit down and you write, you have this inspiration, and then all of a sudden you get stuck. And then you
mm-hmm.
don't know where to go from there. And I love to write. So, you know, I'm thinking, oh, I don't need somebody to hold my hand for this. But I'm sitting there thinking, I need to have somebody, you know, like I need to have the support of somebody helping me with this, because I will get stuck. And even though, you know, writing is something that's easy for me, it's so much easier to have that support, to have
mm-hmm.
that coach, and to, instead of trying to do it alone, because honestly for me, it doesn't move very fast, you know, and it's just going to sit there because now I don't know how to unstuck myself from it.
Well, and that's what I'm also a master RIM facilitator, and that's a mind-body technique that I use to help people get unstuck. It really goes back, and, you know, so I wish I'd had it actually for myself, because I could have gotten rid of Mr. Bowman a lot sooner than I did. Now I get to tell stories about him, but I mean, you know, I can go back and, like, imagine in my mind telling him, well, I don't care what you think, I'm going to be a writer, and then go on, you know, I'm not going to no business track, and I'm not going to become an accountant, I want liberal arts, you know. I did not have that tool, but that's something I do include, you know, when I'm coaching clients, if they get stuck, and I see it coming, it's so funny, I mean, I can almost predict, it's like, all right, the self-saboteur is starting to come up because they're, you know, they're getting afraid, I'm going to come out with this, blah, blah, blah. And,
mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And I have people that I, you know, I have an accountability partner and I have a mastermind group that I'm, and they're like, okay, what are you doing? You know, so it's not like I need somebody to kind of look over and give me direction. But I do have, when I get finished with my projects, I send my projects to readers. Because...
Mm.
I mean,
that's a cool idea.
We all need that, because, I mean, even though I'm a great writer and I'm a great editor and I can see the message, you know, in my own stuff, it's like, you know, when you know something so well, you can forget to say something.
Yes.
That's the thing that the readers will catch. They might say, well, what about this? You know, what did you mean by this? And that's, you know, so even the best writers have that have support of other writers. I remember I saw Amy Tan speak when I was living in Indianapolis, and she was in a writing group with Stephen King and a number of other published, you know, well-known authors, and they would support each other. So even the best of us need support. So, and it's almost like, I can't imagine starting out to do something that I really didn't know how to do without some support. You know, I've also trained with Jack Canfield, and one of the things that he repeatedly says when, you know, in the training rooms is success leaves clues, you know, you don't have to pave that way alone. You know, look for people who are already doing what you're doing, whether it's writing a book or, you know, running a marathon or, you know, trying to get on the Olympic team, whatever it is. Look to people who have already done that.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because, like you said, I mean, it doesn't matter how high level or skilled you are, it's always good to have, you know, another pair of eyes looking at something. Or, I mean, I have an accountability partner too, and yet she's there more to help me make sure that I am saying, you know, doing what I said I'm going to do, but she
mm-hmm.
doesn't have the technical skills to look over the work that I'm doing. So, you know, I think that's why it's important to have that coach or have, you know, that person who is skilled in that particular thing to help you move, you know, along. And I know people who have written books and they just wrote the book and they used, you know, Create Space and uploaded to Amazon, and you know, and had no editing, or, you know what I mean? Like, it didn't really go out to the those channels to get the book published. But at the same time, I feel that's really great and really depends on what your intention is. You know, do you have the intention to just publish something, or do you have the intention of getting your story really out there to a lot more people? And if that's the case, then I think it is important to have that support system to work with you and moving you in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about books, you know, what are some must-dos for writing a book?
Well, I think we covered some of those. You know, is the must-dos are, you know, making sure you have that plan in place, thinking about the audience, doing the mind mapping, and then really taking time in the beginning. And a lot of times, you know, I bet you I've worked sometimes up to 2 months just on that part alone with clients. You know, and I like, you know, it's like gather all those building materials before you start erecting the house.
Right.
Read. That's another thing writers must do. And, you know, just writing a book or writing in general, I was told this, I tell this story a lot, even to my, when I was teaching at the university, is that there was a journalist that went to Key West to interview Ernest Hemingway. And he walks into Mr. Hemingway's house and sees piles of books. And he says, "Mr. Hemingway, why do you have all these books?" And he said, "Every writer must read."
Oh,
and
totally.
Yeah. So when someone I'm working with says they don't read, I go, "Oh," and it shows, because we learn so much from reading.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm looking at my stand here, and I've got Paulo Coelho.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, you're not going to believe this, but see, he's my favorite author of all time. And as you're speaking of Hemingway, I'm about to say, okay, I read Paulo Coelho's book, and most of my inspiration, like when I really want to write something very inspiring, it comes from writing his books. I mean, from reading his books.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I just thought it was, like, so synchronistic that you said that.
Yeah, I'm reading Manuscript Found in Acre right now, and it's awesome.
Oh, I love that book, yeah. I can't wait for his new one. It's coming out in August.
It's cool, yeah. And I read across different genres, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I also have The Gift of The Gift by Poems by Hafiz. I love poetry as well, and that,
mm-hmm.
even though I don't write a lot of poetry, and I have done some and have won a couple of awards, I don't put a lot of time in that, but there's just something about watching the way the words are put together, you know, how they're paired and the rhythm and the rhyme of things. I just love that. And then another one of my favorite, I have a lot of favorite authors, and it's Khaled Hosseini. He wrote The Kite Runner, and I'm reading his latest one, and The Mountains Echoed. I mean, love his writing. So I typically have several books going at a time.
Me too.
There's no leadership book on this pile, but there's piles all over my house. When you walk into my place, you know I love books. And so by reading, it expands my vocabulary, expands my style. It provides me with some quotes to use, you know, when I want to drop a
yes.
quote or two in something I'm writing. And it also, it is inspirational. A lot of times I'll see something, especially in the more self-help or, you know, spiritual books that get me thinking. And then that can become a blog. You know, last week or a couple weeks ago, I said something about, you know, what are you hiding from yourself? And it's like, oh, boy. It kind of, it's like, okay, this feels like there's something that needs to be written there. So, you know, I think writing in general, we need to be, think of it as a practice of showing up on a consistent basis, and it doesn't need to be every day. I don't care if it's Sunday morning for an hour. As long as you know that Sunday morning, every Sunday morning, you're going to sit down and write, or whatever day it is. Or if you want to break it up and do 15 minutes three times a week. It's about committing, making that commitment to yourself to show up and write. And then reading. Just read. Even if it is just for 15 minutes a day. I work with words most of my day. And I still look forward to having those few minutes in the evening just to sit down and just read something that's going to take me out of my day-to-day experience, just to be inspired, you know, have those words touch me. You know, I'm a writer at heart. So that for me, that's really important. But I also know that as a teacher of writing, that we need to have those examples so that we can emulate them. I don't want to call it copy, right. But emulate. Yeah.
That's so true. And it's funny because maybe for most writers, reading does go hand in hand. I'm assuming that's probably how you get ideas for your projects, right? I mean, just by reading different things. Would I be correct in that, or or do you have a different way of getting ideas for your projects?
Yeah, no, my ideas for my projects, it's like, I remember the first novel, which is not published, it's been circulated, and I probably can get it published now if I went back and just played with it a little bit more, but I was walking my kids to school. I was living in Connecticut at a time. Yes, I'm a little bit of a gypsy. I think I'm planted, though. My daughter says I finally found the coast I was looking for. But I was walking my son, I guess I'd walked and I was coming home, and I heard Masks of Illusion, and I went, what is that? And so I went, oh, and then suddenly the story started coming, you know, and I started to write it. And so that's how the first novel, and the second novel, The Whispered Teachings of Grandmother Trout, really came probably on the heels of writing On the Mother Lagoon. Now, On the Mother Lagoon, I was actually asked to write. One of the editors that I had worked for started a women's sports publishing company.
Mm.
And so because I owned a fly fishing lodge at the time, yes, I've had a varied background.
Now I'm thinking, wow, writer, now she owns the fishing. Wow, okay.
I know, it's like I had someone say,
talk about material for writing right there.
Exactly. It's my life is where, right. I am. Yeah, and you know, whether it's, you know, relationship issues. I was a relationship column, probably one of the worst times of my life. But so here's the other thing that I've discovered, that we don't, as writers, we don't have to know what we're writing about. Writers write what we need to know.
Oh, yeah. I agree,
right?
With that.
Writers write what we need to know. It's an exploration process. It's a discovery process.
So much so. I feel like my life is a walking laboratory, you know?
Yes, I call it primary research. Yeah, this is where we and then we get to write about it. It's how we teach, you know. It's kind of a, you know, if we want to talk about soul contracts, I want to read mine next time.
Here, you're going to get to experience all these things, and you're going to get to actually write about them.
Yeah. I didn't read that fine print. Most of the time, I'm experiencing something, and then I write about it. Have the experience, and then I put language to it.
Yeah, that's exactly how my writing happens. And sometimes I even get, you know, that feeling of like, oh, the inspiration is not there. Like, there isn't anything really going on with my life right now that I need to write about, but... You know, I'm just actually going to touch back on what you said previously about, you know, creating that schedule and sitting down and writing, because I think a lot of the times writers have this idea that they can only write when the inspiration strikes. Mm-hmm. And what I'm finding is that when I do take the time to write, even sometimes I'm not inspired about something, is I just jot down whatever is on my mind at that time. It's just like a mind dump, right? And then all of a sudden, the inspiration will come. But if we wait around for the inspiration to come, you know, it could be days before you start writing again, or...
Right. Yeah, or months. And that's why, you know, like in The Artist's Way, Julia Cameron talks about having writing your morning pages, three you know, three handwritten pages every morning, Ernest Hemingway actually wrote letters before he started writing. That was the way he warmed up. So,
okay.
And that's, yeah, and it goes back to that commitment of just show up. Just show up. If you really, really want to write, if you really, really want to write, you have to make the commitment to showing up. And that's the only way it's going to get done. You know, quoting Jim Rohn, nobody's going to do your push-ups for you.
No one's going to do your push-ups for you.
Yeah, nobody's going to do. No, you can hire a ghostwriter, but it's not going to be the same thing. You know, I've ghostwritten books, and I've, you know, co-written and co-edited, you know, kind of heavy edit content edits. You know, that gets the book out, the message out there, but it will lack that self-transformation.
Yes.
Because for me, writing, it's like listening to my own voice. It's like I'm paying attention to myself, and that's been really important many times in life, my life, you know, where I haven't felt heard or understood. At least if I'm sitting down to write, I'm listening to me. And somebody's, you know, I'm starting to understand me more. And why not understand ourselves more? What interests us? What gives us energy? What has hurt us, and how we, you know, how we can get over that hurt or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So
besides being someone who helps writers write, you're also an author yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you currently working on?
Well, I mentioned it earlier.
Yeah, that's
right.
You did about the money, right? The woman.
Yeah,
that's right.
So I'm in the final edits of the Whisper Teachings of Grandmother Trout, and it'll be going off to the copy editor, you know, in a couple, 3 weeks, something like that. Hopefully. I will tell you, I sometimes get a little caught up in my clients' work, and so some of my projects go slower than I like them to, but I spend a little bit of time each day about it with them, and then I think about them. And here's the other thing, is that there's as much writing gets done when you're away from your computer, too. Once you get going.
That's so true.
I mean, I'll be doing yoga or, you know, walking the dog or something and go, oh, I got to remember to put this in, right? You know, so always, here's another tip, always have something to write on. So, you know, great iPhones, great, pull that notepad out, you know, the note function, and type yourself a note, or carry a little notepad in your purse, or in your, I've got paper around, so if I'm not near my phone, jot it down, and then have a file for those. But so yes, Whisper Teaching in final edits. I'm happy with it. I had stuck it in the desk drawer for a while. I think novel writing is probably the place I haven't been published yet, so that's probably a little bit of my edge, so I can easily stall it.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that's the research and more of my, is where it's most of my time spent right now, is on women, money, and their inner male connection. And I got to do the primary research.
Yeah, I've done research in that area too.
yeah, and it's like, you know, the roller coaster going, man, you know, and then I finally said, wait a minute, I work hard. What is going on here? So I took a little walk and had this little conversation with God and said, all right, I don't get it. And I said, so what is it? What's blocking, you know, me from having my abundance steadily, consistently? And I saw three men, and they were my father and my two husbands, and two ex-husbands. And I went, okay, so what's the connection? And then I realized, you know, and I honor each of them for what they've brought to me, and you know, I've got two awesome kids from my first marriage, and then I, you know, really got brave and courageous in my second marriage. That's where I learned how to fly fish, and I became a Coast Guard captain, was guiding, and, you know, had all sorts of experiences. I went back to school. And my father, you know, without him, I wouldn't be here, and, you know, he was a good man in his own right, but all of them had their own pain and struggles that prevented them from really being in their own power. So their power or their presence came out in more unhealthy ways. You know, the arrogance, the narcissism, and that, and so they're really, I never really had a strong man, and someone who was really grounded in his masculinity, mm-hmm. but with a big heart. And about the time this idea came to me, I was having I'm doing RIM facilitation. I had several clients, including some of my writing coach clients, bring this up. Like, the money's just not coming, blah, blah, blah. And I was watching this pattern, and then I was asking questions about this, and each of them had fathers who really weren't there for them. And I went, there's something there. And so, and this was one evening I spent kind of thinking about this, contemplating this, and then I felt this book calling my attention on my bookshelf. And the interesting thing is that it was a book I'd never read completely, kind of started it and put it aside. And it was Linda Shears Leonard's The Wounded Woman, Healing the Father-Daughter Relationship. Yeah. I went, well, okay, looks like we're going to go deal with that now. So I opened the book, and I can't even find the page now, because it was like, oh, my God, this is it. This is the answer. It's like she said, with women who have not had strong male role models, strong father figures, good men who were really grounded and, you know, heart-centered, but willing to really be the provider, be the protector, that when they end up attracting other people, other men like them in their lives, or people if they're, you know, in a same-sex kind of relationship. Yeah, those characteristics, they attract people, and they end up having all sorts of, you know, issues. I mean, luckily my not quite as dysfunctional as the ones that they mentioned. She mentioned in the book, you know, people, women who can't hold jobs, who, you know, have, who just, you know, kind of grovel along in life. And it's like, ooh, this is it. And she said it's because there's nothing to hold on to inside of it. So if you think about, each of us has both masculine and feminine energies.
Mm-hmm.
I am, you know, way balanced in the feminine. I got this huge heart, you know, and you know, my second husband called me the great earth mother, you know, because I
just cute.
Yeah, bring home animals, you know, and it's like, stop that. But, you know, I would rescue pelicans and take them to the zoo to be taken care of, you know, or ospreys when I lived in Texas, that kind of thing, you know, always go out of the way to help somebody, and with people, too. And so when we're, for those of us women who have had that, we're most likely going to be the nurturers, the healers, the caretakers. But really, to be able to take care of ourselves with or without a partner, we need to have that grounded masculine energy as well. And so this book goes into that thesis, goes into the causes, and then I explore ways to really ground that male energy. And for me, and the shift is happening, thankfully, you know, it's like, this works. It's like I had to come up with someone I really, and I was talking to a male friend of mine when I really processed this book, and he said, well, who do you know who's a strong male role model? And I went, I don't know anybody. And he said, it's not me, you know, because he acknowledged his own little, I don't want to call them, his own areas of growth. And I was like, oh, my God. But I finally came up with someone who is this really grounded, manly man. You know, Hunter, he lives in Canada. He's like, he's a huge leader in his area. And but he's got the biggest heart. And I just love that man. And, you know, it's like, and I said to him, I told him about this a few weeks later after I came in, and I said, can we clone you? He's married, happily married with kids, and just go find somebody yourself. So that's the thesis. So that the first step is to figure, you know, acknowledge that, and then find mm-hmm. the male role model. And that's basically the book, you know, delving into all that, so.
That's so, it's a fascinating story, because as you're sharing, you know, like the highlights of the book, and I'm seeing myself in this story. I grew up with a stepfather who took care of the family and everything, but he could not stand up for himself.
my mom pretty much ran him over, and I and my dad wasn't really that present in my life. He, you know, had his own family and was living far away from me, so I didn't have that connection with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so my role model was my stepdad, and I was very, very close to him, and there were just different things that my mom would do that just really pissed me off, and I would try to tell him about it, and he wouldn't really, in my eyes, he didn't really do anything about it. So it made me feel like, wow, this is a lot of weakness here. And
mm-hmm.
and I've all and every time, like, we wanted money to go do something, I mean, he took care of the family, but if it was money for extra things, like, he never had it, and then my mom would always call him cheap. It was just like this whole money energy thing that went around my house, and I saw how that played out in my life. And it's very interesting because I see my sister, who is my dad's daughter with my stepmom, and of course she had him the whole time, and my dad has always been very strong, and, you know, always was an entrepreneur, always built everything, you know, from the ground up. And I see her, and her relationship with money is so different than my relationship with money. She's very grounded. She's very wise with her money. Me, that book is definitely for me.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
So we're actually.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh no, I was going to say we're getting closer to the closing here. So I wanted to ask you, you know, are you going to be offering any courses and retreats on this topic?
Yeah, I am. I'm actually, as I'm writing the book, I'm developing the course content and plan on doing it in a couple of different ways. I really do want to do a retreat. I'm thinking of sometime in the middle of next year. But first I'll do the telecourse, and then so we can have a live, I'm going to have a live model or, you know, live on telecourse, and then also someone can just kind of download a workbook type thing and work their ways through it. Nothing energizes me more than, you know, having a group of people around and facilitating them. So ultimately the retreat will happen, and likely in Southern California.
Yay!
Yeah, right. It's kind of hard to go any place when San Diego is such a beautiful go-to city. You know?
So. Oh, my gosh, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. Yeah, my in-laws live in Oceanside.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Great. So you're going to, of course, so when do you, you say that the book is now going into final editing.
Novel is, the Women, Money, and Intermale Connections, probably about 6 months from being complete.
Oh, 6 months. Okay.
Yeah. But I'll be working, I'll do the telecourse sooner than that. Just in part, it'll also give me some stories to use. So.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. So, how can people reach you and get onto your mailing list and find out more about the things that you're creating and doing and your books, your coaching, everything you seem to have going on, your fly fish experience?
I know. It's like I'm a Renaissance woman.
Yes, I love that.
So my website is www.kathysparrow.com, and it's K-A-T-H-Y. SPARROW. And my email is Kathy@KathySparrow.com.
Perfect. So before we end the call, I just want to ask you any final words or thoughts that you want to leave the listeners with? With anything, writing, money, editing, whatever comes to you.
Yeah, so it's like I just stopped for a minute to tap in and listen to what needs to happen, you know, what should be said. And the first thing that really popped in was, like, honor yourself.
Mm.
Honor the truth of who you are. Honor the message that you have to share with the world. And whether it's just a spoken word that you share with someone on the street, in the grocery store, or if you write a book, someone needs to hear it. And our job is to really show up and be present. And so show up, be present, and enjoy the ride.
Woohoo! Reminds me of roller coasters, and I love roller coasters. And I, in fact, I was just at the
Knott's Berry Farm with my kids. I think it was last week. I went with my husband and the kids and took my daughter to her very first roller coaster, crazy, insane roller coaster ride. And I'm like screaming. I have my arms up in the air. And I just like every time I go to a big roller coaster like that, it just makes me feel so alive, right? And we get to the end and I'm looking at her face and she just has like this look of horror. And I'm laughing. I'm telling her, honey, don't confuse fear with excitement. You're just really excited about life and about roller coasters.
Awesome.
And I think that's, you know, that's the way to live life. Sometimes, of course, those fears are going to show up and they're going to scare us. But if we think about, you know, the same chemicals that, the same chemical reaction that we have when we're scared is the same chemical reaction when we're excited. So instead of thinking that you're really, really scared, just think you're really, really excited. And, you know, you have an amazing, powerful story to share. We all do. And the difference is, are you willing to share it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I want to namaste you.
Oh, thank you. Namaste to you too.
Thank you. And just thank you so much for coming on the show and providing amazing tips, sharing your wonderful wisdom, you know, your knowledge and your experience all around, because it seems like you have, like you said, you know, life, your life really is, what was the term you used again? Because I love that. I call it the my laboratory, but you had a different term.
Oh, primary research.
Primary research, yes.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's been an adventure.
A good one, because even the experiences that we've had that are, we, you know, quote unquote, say they're negative, are all the experiences that give fuel to what you get to share with other people.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's exactly it. I could say that anything that I've gone through that's been a trial and tribulation, I've really been able to help other people with that. And that, I think, is my mission, you know.
Mm.
So somewhere along the way, I said yes to the primary research and the responsibility with that comes to being willing to share the message and just be there and be vulnerable enough, transparent enough.
Mm-hmm.
To speak or write whatever needs to be said in the moment to whoever's in front of you, whether it's somebody who's exactly in front of you or an audience who either on the radio or who will read a book.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much again. And everyone, please make sure that you contact Kathy if you are looking for a coach, an editor. She is fantastic. I've worked with her and she is phenomenal. And I'm actually going to be having a conversation with her, how she can help me with my book. And so my next one. And her information is going to be on our page. And again, just to, you know, say this again, it's www.Kathy, K-A-T-H-Y, Sparrow, S-P-A, RROW.com, and her email is Kathy@KathySparrow.com. Again, this information will be available on the page. Thank you so much. If you want to contact me for anything, feedback, if you want to be on my show, a guest on my show, you can contact me at Jacqueline, J-A-C-Q-U-E-L-I-N-E, it's a long name, at WiseHeartsWithin.com. My information is also on the page. Again, everyone, thank you so much. Thank you, Kathy. Have a wonderful day, and we'll connect again soon. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.